back to left corner to Aguilar. Aguilar to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilar. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
All right, another week begins. In fact, a week begins, which just happens to be our final full week of the calendar year 2024, just the way the schedule hits. We won't have another full week this year of Flames Talk until we're into 2025.
Will you and Vix be caroling on Friday? Like, maybe... We wish you a Merry Christmas.
Only if you're there.
I'll drop by for some caroling.
If you drop by to make it a true chorus, we will. You know, if you didn't
I don't know.
Is it a drum line?
No, it's definitely not.
Do we stomp the yard? Is that what it is? I don't know.
Like, I don't know the word for it.
Well, if you haven't picked up on the smartassery, that's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. Wes supposed to be. We got Shannon Cam as our
you
producer.
You know what? That's it. I'm out of the band on Friday. I'm no longer coming into Carol.
I think you should anyway. Hopefully you had a great weekend. Welcome in. This hour is underway on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, and Seeker. Live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Go ahead, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio. Well, that was definitely a solid response. In fact, I don't know if you could have come up with a better response from the Calgary Flames the way Thursday went against Tampa Bay, 2 days later to how Saturday went against the defending Stanley Cup champion Florida Panthers. Remember, you and I on pregame Saturday talked about how hard Mackenzie Weegar was in his 499th career game and took too much of it, but he took sole responsibility for the 8-3 loss against Tampa Bay. So after his 500th game on Saturday, it was good to hear this from Mackenzie Weegar following a solid performance from the team.
Obviously coming off a tough loss against Tampa Bay, and I spoke about it a little bit myself, and I know that the group and backs and everybody was talking about the response the last couple of days, and that's what really makes me proud of is our response tonight, and we showed a great effort, so I'm happy.
And it really was a solid start to finish effort for the Flames. They come away with the 3-0 victory, and look, they got to build on it, and they still have a lot of work to do to get to where they want to go. But the way things went on Thursday, the way things had gone for a good stretch of time prior to Saturday's win, that was exactly what the doctor ordered, wasn't it?
Didn't it just look like a totally different team?
Completely.
And I didn't know how to sort of word this question, or I might have even asked Ryan Husk on Saturday night, like, I think in part it makes you more frustrated as a coach about the previous game. Like, you're watching and thinking, why did we play so poorly in the last game? Like, who are these guys? What did they do with my team two nights ago? Response is the best word for it. And I remember when we were talking specifically about Mackenzie Weegar, one of the things that Ryan Huska sort of stressed was, you know, we talk in our locker room about it's not about reacting, it's about responding. Mm-hmm. And that was not, you know, fair being fair, that was not the best version of the defending Stanley Cup champion Florida Panthers, but the Flames played a frustrating style. They really played their brand, and kudos to them. From Dustin Wolf on out, it was a really impressive night Saturday.
Text lines open at 960-960, and I really liked how well scouted the Flames were. I mean, I thought that you could tell they did their pre-scout really, really well, I thought, and that's one of the things that you talk to any player inside the room over the last season plus about how this coaching staff under Ryan Huska prepares the team for opponents, and I thought there was a really good example of that because, look, the way Florida plays, there's a few teams that play like Florida does. Tampa Bay is not that all that different. Like, when they sniff the puck going north, everybody's on their horse, everybody's going. And I thought the Flames did a really good job of, when you've got a team like that where it's kind of like, as a wave, they go up on the attack, if you have good gaps and active sticks and good positioning and you're a little more aggressive than normal in the neutral zone, that's when you can really turn him over and get him going the other way. And I thought that that happened, and we saw that happen numerous times. And you know, if you've got a team that plays that way that's a little off, like I think we agree, Florida was. They didn't have their captain, one of the best players on the planet, Alexander Barkov, couldn't go that night. Things were just a little bit off. Well, all of a sudden, if their passing isn't pinpoint, next thing you know, you're turning them over all the time. And I thought the Flames had that pre-scouted really well. Hell, I even thought the eventual game-winning goal was a perfect example of that. Nazem Kadri saw that both Kulikov and Mikkola were going on the attack.
Yeah.
And, you know, he maybe gave it a little bit of an extra, like, kind of like a football player, kind of gave that punch, try to get that ball loose, where sometimes you wouldn't. I think Kadri knew exactly what he was doing. If I can force a turnover, I know which way these guys are going. I'm going to have all day. He had all day, and he walked in and made it 1-0. So I just thought it was a really well-scouted, well-prepared, well-executed night from the Flames and exactly what they needed in that regard.
Since you mentioned him, what do you think the Panthers player grades had Kulikov on Saturday?
Cool. Oh boy, was that a rough night. Oh my goodness.
Every once in a while you see one where you feel bad for the guy. And you know, we talked about Kevin Ball on the recent road trip. He had one like that in Dallas where you're like, man, everything this guy touches just goes sideways tonight. And Kulikov absolutely had one of those.
He had because after the giveaway, a little bit later on in the second period, he fell on that one play. And then as he tried to recover, because he fell, gave up a scoring chance. And then as he recovered, took a tripping penalty. You're like, oh my goodness, Kulikov, just take a seat tonight. It's not. Yeah, if I were doing player grades on pat.flamesblog.org,
yeah,
I would
one of my favorites.
It's a good one. You should check it out. 6 to 7 hits a day. I think I would have given him like wouldn't have given him an F, but I would have given the old Peppermint Patty D-. Like,
yeah.
It would have been rough.
Would have been, I don't know what it takes to get to an F, but yeah, D-, I'll take that. Back to the Flames. Yeah. I think you're right. Like, did a really good job of anticipating, did a really good job of maybe sort of flustering the Panthers into some turnovers. And I thought did really strong work on the forecheck as well. Like, Aaron Ekblad looked on Saturday like a guy who kind of had his little brother chewing at his ankles for the last 2 hours. Like, it was just like, oh my God, leave me alone already. And I would say that kind of went team wide. Like, I thought the Flames, a team that prides themselves on pressuring and pressuring in the right spots, really executed that on Saturday.
I give him a lot of credit.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk more in depth about Dustin Wolf in the second hour of this Monday Flames Talk, but that was a big night for him to bounce back. And, you know, he wasn't as busy because Calgary did a pretty good job of spending time on the attack. And when Florida had their possession game going and Florida had them hemmed, you know, for probably almost 50 minutes, didn't do much with it. It wasn't until Backlund scored the 3-0 goal that Florida kind of let all of their reins off and really started to press. And that's when they got the balance of their best opportunities. But, you know, for the vast majority of the hockey game and for the entirety of the game when it was close and still within reach, the Flames did a dynamite job at 5-on-5 of keeping their good players to the outside and neutralizing. Matthew Tkachuk looked like a very disinterested number 19 for a good chunk of that game.
Not his best work.
And I, you know what, you probably have to give a lot of credit to the Huska decision to go back to Coleman and Backlund, or give those two guys along with Matt Coronato.
Yeah.
I thought it had a really good game too. Like, that line was really good. And I thought this was, I'll give you the numbers on it in just a second, but I thought Ryan Huska's comment post game on Saturday was pretty telling. First game in a long time that Backlund and Coleman were back together, and they set the tone all night. And this was head coach Ryan Huska.
It kind of sometimes makes you think, like, why did we break them apart in the first place? Because they do play so well together, but both guys have the ability to make people around them better. So if there's some people struggling, it's always been something that we felt like we'll just stick them with those two. And splitting them up, the hope was, well, we'll get a few more guys going that need to go. But I think they've been together for so long. They're really good friends off the ice. I think that goes a long way. And I think they really have a good understanding of how each other plays the game. So they're very comfortable together. And the person that plays with them, I think, is the benefactor.
That was Ryan Huska on Saturday night. Does make you wonder why you do it in the first place. And that's not a
good job of explaining why, though.
Yep. But you put them back together.
Yeah.
And basically hard matched for the first 40 minutes, if not more, against what turned into a one-line team. It turned into a team with a top line, right? Yeah. Like Florida usually has two top lines when Barkov's healthy. But going Bennett with Verhaeghe and Tkachuk, that was clearly their top line. And the Backlund line went head-to-head all night against them and straight up again for the entirety of that game being in the balance before it was 3-0. Like the Backlund line crushed them. It wasn't even close.
You know, this is going to be a little bit inside baseball maybe, but post-game, you know, we all rush into the locker room. And it's always interesting to see the sort of storylines other people are pursuing or the questions they're asking. It's always interesting to, you know, based on those questions, kind of hear what other reporters thought was the story of the game. And I got to tell you, maybe I missed the boat, but I was surprised there were so many Matt Coronato questions on Saturday, because with all due respect to Matt Coronato, who had a good game, that line was all about the two veterans on Saturday. Like those guys, that was as good of hockey as I've seen Blake Coleman play perhaps this season. Might have been his strongest game, I think, all season, or certainly his strongest game in quite some time. I thought Michael Backlund was really good. And, you know, it was one of those weird ones where suddenly everyone was asking questions about Coronato. And I was kind of thinking to myself, hang on here. Like, weren't Blake Coleman and Michael Backlund the story of that hockey game? They, you know, outside of Dustin Wolf, they would have been for me.
Yeah, they were for me. You know, Pelche, I thought, had a really good game too.
Absolutely.
But they don't win that game if Coleman and Backlund don't set the tone against the Tkachuk line from the very opening shift.
Yep.
Like they went head to head all night, and it was Ryan Huska made a real concerted effort to get them out there against that Tkachuk line on a almost shift by shift basis.
Sure.
So often they allowed nothing defensively and hemmed them in, created scoring opportunities. They score the two goals. Coleman, that huge goal late in the second period, and then Backlund kind of with the shrug when he scores the 3-0 goal after he had the kicked-in goal disallowed in the second. But, yeah, I don't think that they kind of build on what they did and build throughout that night if the Coleman-Backlund combination doesn't control the game the way they did.
Perhaps the best compliment I can give them is if they finish that game with zero goals. If Blake Coleman doesn't thread one through Spencer Knight, which was a very bizarrely played moment by the Panthers netminder. Like if Coleman doesn't score that goal, if Backlund doesn't then make it 3-0, I think I'm still sitting here today talking about how I thought they were the two best players on the Flames, outside again of Dustin Wolf and net. But that was how highly I thought of the defensive work that Backlund and Coleman did. If we're talking about a game that finishes with 0 points, I think I'd still be sitting here today pumping their tires.
Mm-hmm. Good on them. And I will say I wasn't surprised by it. Like, was I surprised that they went out and blanked the defending champs and that they kind of were as decisively better on Saturday? Yeah, that was a little surprising. But I wasn't surprised by the response and the fact that they were just night and day better than they were on Thursday, because for the most part, they haven't strung uncharacteristic games together all that often. I guess they had the two in a row, Vegas and Utah on the road, but otherwise they've been able to respond when they even the Dallas game, the uncharacteristic third, they responded with a good game against Nashville. Obviously the Tampa game, they responded with the good game against Florida. Now you'd like to string as many of the characteristic games together without the uncharacteristic ones in there very often, but this team's been pretty good at responding this year.
Yeah. And I thought Ryan Huska pushed a lot of the right buttons, you know, leading into that game. I thought, although to use one of my favorite sayings, the Huberto Kadri Pospisil line was exciting in both ends against Tampa, probably even most exciting in the end. You didn't want them to be. I thought it was a good bit of coaching to leave that group together. I certainly thought it was a good bit of coaching to reunite Coleman and Backlund. And, you know, based on Ryan Huska's comment post-game, I think it's going to be a long time before we see those guys apart again. And even, you know, credit to him on putting Joel Hanley into the lineup with Mackenzie Weegar. I thought Joel Hanley delivered a much more predictable kind of no-frills game than they've been getting from Daniil Miromanov of late. And so a lot of the right buttons, and then it was a team that was ready to go. And you expect that. If you get torched 8-3 on home ice and you don't come out looking a lot better, something's, you know, something's wrong. There's a rotten apple somewhere. But the response was exactly what it needed to be Saturday.
One other thing that I thought was really crucial about Saturday's game was the fact that they played with the lead and they settled into a lead, which has barely happened of late. Like all their wins recently have come with, you know, it's been later in games that they found a way. A lot of their losses, they may have had leads, but those leads were very short-lived. So they had a lead in the first period on Kadri's goal, and they let that lead breathe all the way till late in the second when Coleman gave him a little bit more breathing room. But then they get Blake's goal with 55 seconds to go in the second, and they give themselves an opportunity to play with a multi-goal lead for a period of time, which they have not done in ages. Yeah. The last time they played for an extended period of time, like more than 2 or 3 minutes, with a multi-goal lead was November 23rd against Minnesota, when they had about 15 minutes of a two-goal lead in the third period. It evaporated. Minnesota scored those two late goals, but they played with a multi-goal lead. Well, they did that again on Saturday. They even bulged it to 3 on the Backlund goal. And you're like, man, that must be mentally so much. Like, I don't think you let off the gas. I don't think that you all of a sudden get away from your details or anything like that. But just self-consciously, or subconsciously rather, it must be so much better to play with a little bit of a cushion after 40 instead of going to a third against the defending champ saying, oh, here we go. We played a really good game, but we only have one, and these guys could put 3 in the back of our net in the blink of an eye. So that I thought was really important. They got the late one to make it a 2-goal lead, and then Backlund scores, and they were able to play with a 3-goal lead for like almost 15 minutes. That I feel like that was a massive part of it.
The sort of pivotal moment in that stretch for me as well, obviously the goals are significant, but it's Dustin Wolf stopping Sam Bennett on a breakaway, right? And actually two stops on him, because the rebound sort of bounces off him and becomes a dangerous puck again. And for Dustin Wolf to stop Sam Bennett there on that breakaway, a moment where the game against, as we keep saying, the defending champions could all of a sudden go to 2-1. It is just an absolutely massive
Then if they
moment.
Get life, they knew they weren't on it, right?
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, you know, the good teams, the elite teams, when they're having off nights and then they get one, all of a sudden they're like, oh, okay, we're on now. Let's go.
How many times did we see that in Matthew Tkachuk's 6 seasons where, you know, he kind of sleepwalks through a game a little bit? And not saying he did that regularly, but Matthew Tkachuk was one of those guys who could be having a sort of unnoticeable night, as little as you would notice Matthew Tkachuk in a game, and then suddenly his team's down by 1 and it looks like he's been shot out of a cannon on the next 5 shifts.
Yep.
I think that's what we would have seen.
Yep. Agreed. I spoke in the locker room Monday after practice, by the way.
Can I ask you something before you play this?
Of course.
Any idea when they last had a 3-goal lead?
Oh, I didn't go back and look that far.
Yeah.
Because I mean, they played with they had a 3-goal lead against Columbus, but it was for like,
true,
you know,
60
seconds or whatever it was.
Right.
So I guess that would technically be it. The Johnny night against Columbus.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Well, that would be the correct answer. They had a 3-goal lead for 20 seconds.
Okay.
Against Columbus. But before that, let me just quickly, there's nothing better than
This is impressive. You got the
four eyes looking
out
through his duo.
Do you want me to do play-by-play on this?
It's not a duo tang.
Here he goes through the duo tang. Oh, that looks got a Vancouver game there.
No, that was not a 3-2.
As we go, that's a game against the LA Kings. Oh, we're on to a 3-2 loss to Buffalo Sabres. I might have a future in this.
Wes, I don't know where the hell the last time they played. I guess the Devils game.
Shan's got us on October 12th against the Flyers.
The Devils game, they played with a 3-goal lead for 3 minutes and 15 seconds after an empty netter.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there have been some, but like, yeah, against Philly, they had kind of a comfortable 3-goal lead. Has not been very often is the point I would be making.
Maybe we should hear from Blake Coleman on this topic.
So, by the way, no changes at practice. Everything the same. The only important note was that Dan Vladar was back. Devin Cooley backed up on Saturday on emergency recall. Dan Vladar did full practice after the lower body injury kept him out. So that's good news. We all know who's going to be starting on Tuesday after the shutout. It'll be Dustin Wolf. You can take that to the bank, I would imagine. But Dan Vladar was back. Devin Cooley returned to the Wranglers. Kuzmenko skated, but left about 12 minutes in. But he was the odd man out. He's been dealing with a lower body injury. And lines, pairings, exactly the same, including Hanley with Uyghur again. And even Ryan Huska confirmed that Hanley Uyghur will be back together for Tuesday's game against Boston. But yeah, caught up with Blake Coleman, asked him a little bit about, you know, this is a hard brand of hockey the team plays. So to play that brand of hockey, but to get yourself a little bit of breathing room, how big was that on Saturday? Just a little chat with Flames forward Blake Coleman.
I just wanted to ask about the importance of your goal on Saturday night. Like, you haven't played with a lot of multi-goal leads recently. How big was that going to the third period?
Well, it's a bit of a, you know, bit of a relief anytime you can get some breathing room in a game, I think. You know, a bit of a tough bounce, you know, with back skull getting overturned. Otherwise, you're already looking at the 2-goal lead. But, yeah, it's just one of those games where if you can get that breathing room, it just makes our jobs easier. We're comfortable, and obviously we're very comfortable in 1-goal games. We seem to be in a lot of them in the third, but you know, it's nice giving yourself that extra space. You know, we haven't had it that frequently this year.
How does it change the way that you go about your business in the third period when you have a little bit more breathing room?
Oh, not necessarily. You know, you got to still be, you still don't want to give them an inch. I think maybe it changes your strategy a little bit if they pull the goalie type thing. Maybe you're more aggressive shooting from distance or things like that. But aside from that, it's pretty much business as usual. And, you know, we've done pretty well protecting tight games this year.
What goes into a comfort level playing in close 1-goal games? Like what kind of defines a comfort level in that regard?
Well, you know, we've been getting the goaltending is the one thing, but you know, for myself, it's just repetition, experience. I've done it on the biggest stage, been, you know, trusted to go and hold down leads in the Stanley Cup final. So I think the more and more you're thrown into that situation, the more comfortable you feel, and the more looks you've seen and kind of understand what teams are going to look to do late in games. And you know, but collectively, it's just short, hard shifts, and you know, you keep fresh legs on the ice because that's really all it is working. You know, it's hard work at the end of the game to close it out, and you know, you try to keep making them defend. So you know, it's like the old saying that the best defense is a good offense.
We all know that, you know, things tighten up even more as you get into January, February. Playing in a lot of games like that in the first half, can that pay off in the second half of the season?
Well, I think we've pretty much played a playoff brand of hockey all year, and I think if, you know, the closer and closer we get to you know, the playoff push, I guess, or the playoff time of year, the more we're going to benefit just because we understand how to play tight checking games, and that's ultimately what the playoffs are. You know, we're not a run and gun team, and those teams typically get pretty weeded out by the time it gets to the meaningful hockey anyway. So yeah, it can definitely be an advantage, but you know, on the flip side, it's demanding, and you got to be able to keep yourself in that race all the way through to get to that point.
I know you've mentioned, you know, a number of times that the brand of hockey this group plays can be a hard brand sometimes. What goes into kind of making sure that you're able to play that on a regular basis throughout 82 games? It's difficult, so how do you make sure you do it?
Well, a lot of it's off the ice stuff, taking care of yourself and making sure you're getting proper nutrition, sleep. You know, kind of the cliche stuff, but you know, there's certainly time to have fun and cut loose, and there's times where you really gotta take a look at the schedule and realize where your body needs to get that recovery the most, and you know, have the discipline to take care of yourself in that way.
That was Blake Coleman. Chatted with him a little earlier Monday after practice. They do play a hard brand, and so I don't think anything changes in terms of what you're doing when you're up one goal as opposed to two or three, but I would imagine it's just, I don't know, you're a little bit less tense. And I've talked to enough guys, like, just to get that breathing room, I would think is just a little bit of a slight mental weight off, as opposed to here we go again. It's another grind your teeth, white knuckle finish against a really good team. That goal from Coleman late in the second period, I don't think can be understated how important it was.
Well, especially, you know, it's well documented that this is a hockey team that struggles to score. And when I say well documented, I don't think we expect it to change right away either. Like, we're not looking at it and saying, oh, when these five guys get going, this will be an offensive juggernaut. Like, nobody is anticipating that with these Flames. And so if you're leading by one, then you're constantly on the razor's edge of suddenly being in a tie game, and then you don't know where the goal's coming from, right? And that is a stressful, not only is it a taxing style to play, but that's a stressful way to play hockey when you're worried that one little mistake or one little lapse in your structure or whatever it might be, suddenly that winds up in the back of your net, and it feels like all the work that you've done up to that point has just, like, okay, forget about it. Someone just kind of walked down the beach and kicked over your sandcastle, and now you're starting again, right? And so I don't think we're going to be sitting here talking about a Flames team that's going to play with a 2- and 3-goal lead very often. We know this is a team that's going to grind out a lot of 1-goal games, and yet it must be a little bit of a feeling of relief to do that from time to time.
Yep. And they did. And now they've got Boston, a team that has significantly turned around their fortune since the last time they saw them in Beantown in that overtime
loss. Starting to come out of it, aren't they?
They are. They're now all of a sudden in a Atlantic Division playoff spot, and they just rolled over Vancouver on Saturday.
That finished 5-1, I want to say.
5-1, yeah. It was 4-0 at one point. It was 4-0 after 40, so.
Brad Marchand is just a house on fire right now.
Yep.
Yeah.
Elias Lindholm, Nikita Zadorov, revenge game. Do we call it that? It's like the fourth time Zadorov's played the Flames, at least like the third time Lindholm's like, can we, has that storyline done?
Has he been back with the Canucks?
No, because both the games were in Vancouver. Yeah. So this is Lindholm's first time.
I think
time
he's going to get an earful tomorrow.
There was no, I know there was lots made about, like, give Tkachuk a standing O. There's none of that, but there's also no booze for 19 on Saturday either.
I think Lindholm's a different story.
I think it might be.
That's a guy, and you know, similar to Tkachuk, I don't expect maybe booze 3 years out. But Elias Lindholm, a guy that the Flames didn't quite beg to stay, but made quite clear they wanted to build their team around him. And he said, nah, I'll get back to you guys. So about that contract, keep you guys posted. So, you know, that 8-year deal we put on the table, I'm just still mulling it over. Okay, we're trading you then.
Fair. Steinberg and Wes along with you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Time now for a Monday edition of your daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. It's Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. Now Derek Wills joins us to complete our daily Flames Roundtable, the voice of the Flames. Now I do ask this tongue-in-cheek, gentlemen, or somewhat tongue-in-cheek, because there are no absolutes in the world of professional sports, so I grant you that. But in a fun way, gentlemen, after seeing them reunited very successfully on Saturday, would you ever split up Blake Coleman and Michael Backlund again?
Certainly not anytime soon, and certainly not without a really good reason to. And I understand why Ryan Huska did in the first place. The team was struggling to score goals. He was looking for some new combinations and some more chemistry. And he tried just about everything else before breaking up Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman. So I think that was kind of a last grasp at things, trying to make something work offensively in the top nine. And it did some nights, it didn't other nights, but I think for quite some time, we were all wondering, not if, but when Backlund and Coleman would be reunited. So it was great to see them back together. And I do think that they have something special, just the way they're able to play off of each other and read off of each other, and how they are a safe landing spot for anybody. Although with the way Matt Coronato is playing right now, I think you could play him on any one of your top three lines and he's going to have success, but he is a really nice fit on the right side of that line with Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman. But it's a combination that Flames coaches know they can always go back to. And maybe in hindsight, it took them a little bit longer to do that than it should have. But they went back to it the other night and it worked. And unless one of them gets hurt, I would be surprised to see them playing a part anytime soon.
Well, and if anything was missing from that pair before they were split up, it was just a little bit of offensive impact. Like, we know what they can do defensively. We know about their shutdown chops, and yet part of the reason that they were split up is, you know, Ryan Huska was really trying to get kind of everybody going offensively. And you know, in defense, I guess, of Ryan Huska, the Backlund-Coleman pair wasn't generating a lot of opportunities at that point either. And I think we saw on Saturday the sort of trademark way that they can impact offense by not only shutting down the top opposing line, but then generating. Like, they played a big chunk of that game in the other end. You know, those guys specifically talk often about how when you're playing against the best players on the other team, they don't like playing in their own end. And they're not always the best at it. And, you know, I thought they took advantage of that the other night. And so if that can be a line that gets back to not only being able to shut people down, but can contribute a little bit offensively, it takes the pressure off those other lines. I do think, and we've talked about this, guys, that they might have something offensively with Kadri Huberdeau and Pospisil. I know that they're hoping to, obviously, and I know we'll talk about this, get Yegor Sharangovich going, hoping that Connor Zary can help them do that. But if they can get some secondary scoring from Backlund, Coleman, and Coronato, it's going to go a long way.
The for the first, I mean, basically the whole game, but especially the first 40-plus minutes until Backlund scored to make it 3-0, when, you know, the three-goal lead is usually when you see games change a little bit more. Up until that point, it was pretty close to a hard match, guys, of the Backlund line versus what turned into Florida's usually a two-line team, but without Alexander Barkov, it was clearly a top line, not two top lines on Saturday. And the line of Bennett, Tkachuk, and Verhaeghe was that top line. And it was almost a hard match situation of the Backlund line versus that line. And again, in the final 14 minutes or so, when it was 3-0 and it was all about activating and all about letting the reins off and kind of getting out of your structure for Florida to see if they could find one and claw back. Up until that point, when score effects took into account, like, it wasn't close. As it was, even with those score effects, the Flames, like, Backlund versus Bennett straight up, the Flames were over 60% 5-on-5 possession, outscored them 2-0, and finished 7-2 in scoring chances in that head-to-head matchup. And prior to the 3-0 goal, like, it was even more lopsided. It was about 80% possession. It was like 7-0 scoring chances, 2-0 at high danger until the Panthers pushed back a little bit. But Wilsey, when that line was matched up against the Bennett line, which it was frequently on Saturday, and when the game was still close and within a goal or two, It was a very lopsided battle between Backlund, Coleman, and Coronado against that Bennett line. And that's just an example of why that line is so good, why that line is such an asset for the team. So to answer my own question, no, I wouldn't be breaking them up at all unless there was a really, really obvious glaring reason to. There's no way I'm splitting those guys up going forward because they're too much of a important foundational piece for this group on a nightly basis.
Yeah, and now that the team has started to score a little bit more, they finally got more than three goals in a game and then scored three in their next game and three again in the game after that. Maybe you feel like you can settle in on some line combinations that you keep together for a little while. And right now, I feel like they've got two, maybe three lines going. Now, the fourth line's been a little bit in flux because Ryan Lomberg missed a couple of games. But, you know, they've certainly got the Kadri line going. The Backlund line worked really well the other night. They need to get the Zeri line going. And, again, the Rooney line has been pretty consistent in the role that they play. So if they can continue to score goals and win games, then you're going to, I think, allow those lines to stay together, develop some more chemistry, and that allows you to keep Backlund and Coleman together and not break them up again. Although, even if some other lines aren't clicking, I feel like you might be tempted to leave that one together after seeing what we did the other night.
It's our Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg on this Monday. Okay, so that was an extremely positive part of the game. But, gents, there was a stretch there, I don't know, 3 weeks or so ago, when it felt like maybe Yegor Sharangovich was starting to find it again offensively. Willsie, I think he had scored goals in three straight games. Since that point, it's dropped off a little bit, and we have not seen regularly at any point this year Yegor Sharangovich be the impact maker he was for, what, the final two-thirds of last season? Definitely the final, the second half of last season. Guys, what do you think needs to happen to get Yegor back to closer to where he was last year when he really was a big-time revelation for the team and as a result earned himself a nice contract extension?
So he did score back-to-back-to-back games against the Rangers, Wild, and Senators. Do you know how many shots on goal he had in those three games?
I don't 18. Off the top of my head. 18.
18.
Okay.
7, 7, and 4. 7 against the Wild, 7 against the Rangers, 4 against the Islanders. He has one goal in the last nine games. Do you know how many shots on goal he has in the last nine games? 11. Wayne Gretzky once said, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And it feels like we've been having this conversation about Andre Kuzmenko over and over and over again. And don't get me wrong, there's a huge difference between Kuzmenko and Sharangovich. Even when he's not scoring, Sharangovich, I think, is still helping you win hockey games. He's a really good 200-foot player. He's solid defensively. He's good in the faceoff circle when you use him there. So I'm not comparing the two. But for me, they've got the two best shots on the team. And if they're not using them, if you're not shooting, you're not going to score. So I think it's pretty simple. Yegor Sharangovich has to shoot the puck more. One goal in nine games with a total of 11 shots. Three goals in three games with a total of 18 shots. I think that's pretty telling, fellas.
I'll kind of use that same stat, Wilsey, but I'm going to go even more recent. This is how many shots Yegor Sharangovich has combined in his last six games. 4.
Yeah.
He has 4 games where he has mustered one shot on goal. 2 of them, he hasn't fired one. And so, yeah, it shooting's a part of it. I'm not sure that we're seeing Yegor Sharangovich pass on a ton of shots, which means he's not even putting himself in position to unload it. And so I'm going to take a step even further back. And we've watched enough of Yegor Sharangovich to know, like, this isn't a guy who's running people through the boards. This isn't a guy that you have to keep your head up necessarily when he's bearing down on you on the forecheck. And yet, Yegor Sharangovich needs to have some competitiveness in his game to be at his best. And I got to be honest, guys, and maybe I'm being too harsh right now, but I just haven't seen any of that of late. There was a play, trying to remember who the defenseman was, but there was a play on Saturday. He's first to arrive on the forecheck, and he does this like spin move as if he's trying to make sure that two shopping carts don't collide at Costco.
and basically misses the hit on the forecheck.
What
and
an analogy.
The puck is gone. And it's like he almost went out of his way to avoid contact. And, you know, that's me picking on a guy based on sort of one moment. But if Yegor Sharangovich can't kind of meet the minimum that the Flames are asking in terms of the competitiveness and making sure that you're trying to turn over pucks on the forecheck and that sort of stuff, then it really limits his effectiveness. And again, I know he's not running anyone through the boards, but he's shown with his stick work and just kind of using his size properly on angles, like he can win those battles along the boards. We have seen it. We saw it last year when he was playing well. He turned over more pucks by being sort of crafty than he did by being physical, but he was turning over pucks, and right now I'm not seeing it at all.
So what I'm seeing right now from Sharangovich is what we were lamenting in October and November of last season, right? And he got off to a really good, really rough start, and the Flames didn't exactly know where to use him. Wills, you remember for a little bit of a time there, he was their fourth line center for like a good 2-3 weeks last year. They didn't really know where to use him, and then he figured it out. And I remember Ryan Huska talking ad nauseum about how, or some of the coaches that would come sit down with us on Flames Talk postgame, talk ad nauseum about how they really wanted to just like dig in a little bit more. Like, he's never going to be a guy who is overbearing physically. He's not going to be a guy who wins battles on the end boards because of his forecheck. He's not Doer. He's not Pospisil, right? But you've got to dig in a little bit more, and you've got to be stronger with your stick on pucks. And he's really what is frustrating me right now with Sharangovich is we know what he can be. We know what he can be when he gets himself into shooting areas. That thing is ridiculous how it explodes off his stick. And goalies, how many times last year did goalies just shrug their shoulders and say, "What the hell do you want me to do with that?" And how many times have we seen that this year? Maybe those three games in a row when he scored, and that's about it. And part of Yegor getting to those good shooting areas when he can do that is digging in a little bit more. You got to take a little bit of contact to do that, and you can't be losing these battles in both ends like he's doing. Like, it feels like every board battle he's going into right now in either zone, he's coming up on the bad end of it. And we have seen way too many shifts where it's 17 who kills a cycle because he loses a battle on the end boards. That can't happen. Like, he's too good to have these things happen, and he's too impactful to have these things happen. And he figured it out last year. And I know this year started with an injury, and again started with him flip-flopping between center and the wing, but we know he can do it, and he has done it before, and he did it for a long period of time last year and helped himself to a career season in 30-plus goals. So he needs to get back to that. I don't know how you drill it in that say, hey, this is what you did to get yourself to the career year last year. Do this more again. But right now, he looks way too soft, and he doesn't have to be. Again, he's never going to be a guy who is imposing physically. That's not his game. But he can win more battles than he's been winning. He can dig in more than he's dug in, because we've seen it before. So I guess to answer my own question, what do I think needs to happen? That needs to happen. I just don't know, as a coaching staff trying to kind of push the right buttons, how you get that out of them again. They did it last year. How do you recreate it from last year when he had a few months where we were talking about the same things?
Yeah, and he still has time to turn a season around. Mm-hmm. I don't think it helped his cause that he got hurt in the final preseason game and missed the first 7 regular season games. It probably didn't help him. I'm not sure it hurt him all that much to bounce back and forth between center and the wing, because we saw him do that and do it successfully last season. So again, we know that he can do it, but he certainly has the ability to impact games more than he has of late. And I want to see that shot more. But Wes, you made a great point, you know, talking about the fact that it's not like he's doing what Andrei Kuzmenko has done in a lot of nights, and that is pass up shot opportunities, looking for a better one, looking for a grade A chance. I'm not really seeing that from Yegor Sharangovich. he's just not really putting himself in a position to shoot. And another area where I think he's really good, and when he's at his best, he's doing this, is on the back check. He's got good speed. He's smart. And I'm not comparing Yegor Sharangovich to Johnny Gaudreau, but I always thought that when Johnny was at his best is when he was really busting his butt in the back check. Because how many times did we see him pick a guy's pocket in the neutral zone, and all of a sudden a rush against turns into a rush for, and quite often the Flames would capitalize on those opportunities. You know, Sharangovich can do that too. And we're also really not seeing him use his shot on the power play as much as we have in the past. And quite often, if a guy like him who has scored 30 in this league can get in a bit of a role in the PP, that will carry over to his 5-on-5 game, whether it be confidence or something else. So would love to see him find a way to use that shot more, both in the power play and at 5-on-5. It is an absolute weapon. And again, I don't think he's necessarily hurting the team right now. It's not like he's turning pucks over left and right, and he's a huge liability defensively. We've just seen him play at a much higher level. So yeah, if he can get back to being that guy again, maybe the Flames will have all four of their lines going, or at least, you know, two or three of them on a regular basis.
Well, and that's one of the things that I, excuse me, that's one of the things that I maybe noticed or inferred about the line shuffle. You know, when you put him with Connor Zary and Jacob Pelche, you're putting them with two young, inexperienced, you know, both guys still less than 100 games in the NHL. And you're basically saying, Yegor, you lead this line. You know, we know Connor Zary's a play driver, so I don't know if he's asking Yegor Sharangovich to drive the line, but you're telling him, like, you lead this line. You be the guy who sets the tone. You be the guy who makes sure that others are engaged and other guys are competing. And, you know, I don't know if it's fair to say that if you're a passenger on Michael Backlund's wing, you can sometimes get away with it just because of the style Michael Backlund plays. You know, other people maybe aren't noticing you as much, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. But I think Ryan Huska is challenging Yegor Sharangovich to, like, okay, you've done the passenger thing long enough. Show me you can lead this line.
Yeah. And for me, Connor Zary is definitely the driver of that line. But Yegor Sharangovich has the ability to be that type of player as well. Now, the one thing I do wonder about, just thinking out loud here, guys, you know, the Flames bench boss has talked before about wanting to have at least one guy with some sandpaper on every line. Who's that guy on that line? I mean, I think Jacob Pelche was a couple of nights ago. That might be the best game he's played it as a member of the Flames. I think certainly the best game he's played for the team this season. So maybe he can be the sandpaper on that line with Zary and Sharangovich. But if he's not, does Sharangovich have to be that guy? I mean, Zary's got a little grit in his game, but he's more of a playmaker than anything else.
Yeah, but Jacob Pelche the other night, and yeah, he's not necessarily what you describe as sandpapery, but, you know, if 5'9", 180-pound Jacob Pelche can be winning his board battles against Aaron Ekblad, then you need Yegor Sharangovich to be willing to engage in them. You know, that I think how Pelche was winning some of those battles is sort of the template for how Sharangovich can. Like, you're right, Wilsey. There's no obvious sandpaper on that line, but we started this conversation on, okay, well, of course you had to put Coleman and Backlund together. Look how well it works. Unfortunately, that doesn't leave a ton of sandpaper to spread around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and I think we all know that he can get out of it. And boy, if he were to do that and return to the guy that was as much of a threat as he was kind of in the back end of last year, back half of last year, that would be a real nice boon for this Flames group as well. For now, we will wrap things up on the Daily Flames Roundtable. We will talk to you on a game day on Tuesday, Wilsey. Thank you so much, as always.
Okay, guys. Have a good night.
He's Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. That's your Daily Flames Roundtable. That also wraps us up this hour on Flames Talk. Thanks to Shan and Cam, our producers, as well. And the Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport.